This episode is presented by New York Mutual Trading.
Hey there, HRN listeners. This is Harry Rosenblum, host of Feast Your Ears. I know that news about COVID-19 and the coronavirus has made a lot of people nervous about getting sick. This collective unease has already had a big impact on our restaurant and food communities, especially in New York's Chinatowns. We hope that now more than ever, our listeners will join us in supporting restaurants and the hospitality industry at large. Many of the restaurants we love are small, independent businesses. That means that even one or two bad weeks can put them in jeopardy of cutting staff, limiting hours, or even having to close for good. As long as we're still able, we should go out to eat and support our favorite restaurants. I think it's also great to remember that hospitality professionals are really good at hygiene and food safety practices. Long before there were guides all over the news about how to properly wash your hands, they were already experts at hygiene. Guests' health is tantamount to successful hospitality in any restaurant. And even if you don't want to go out, you can still support restaurants by ordering delivery, buying gift cards, and giving them some extra love on social media. What better way to handle a crisis than by supporting those in our own community? If we don't support them now, they might not be there when this crisis is over. Join HRN in supporting restaurants during this time, especially our friends in Chinatowns around the country. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Why Food, a podcast about entrepreneurs, innovators, and career changers. Today, you just get me, your lone co-host, Ethan Frisch. Valerie is off doing more exciting things than hanging out in a studio. But I have a really interesting guest to introduce you to, somebody who I've known for several years and I've collaborated with on several projects, and somebody who's become a close friend and has made the career transition that we usually talk about, but has made another career transition after that and has kind of gone back and forth in both directions. Jose Alvarez is the founder and owner of Tree Star Soap Company in Queens, New York. He manufactures the soap in his apartment in Jackson Heights, which is across the street from my apartment in Jackson Heights. Yeah. Jose, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
So tell me about Tree Star. I know about Tree Star already. Tell our listeners about Tree Star.
So Tree Star is a feel-good soap company, natural soap company and soap company that I started in Queens almost 3 years ago. The whole idea behind Tree Star is we create natural soaps out of olive oil, coconut oil, castor bean oil, these vegetable oils, turn them into soap. But at the same time, we also make them pretty sensational. One of our taglines is tickle the senses with fresh foods for your skin. So we like to make them very, make them drive a sensory experience in the shower, right? So that tactile part, that
sensory experience in the shower.
Exactly. We try Amazing. To keep it fun and playful. We sell soaps around the city right now, wholesale, direct to consumer on our website. We take a nice playful approach to the whole idea. We're kind of in the beauty cosmetic realm. We take a more, like I said, a playful approach. One of our top selling bars is lemon poppy, you know, instead it has poppy seeds in it from yours truly, Burlap and Barrel.
It smells great. We have a whole pile of bars on the table in front of us.
Just a little bit about Tree Star. We started 3 years ago. We launched at the Queens Night Market where I met you. You were volunteering there, and we hit it off immediately.
What were some of the? I mean, let's start with your career. How you got into soap making? Talk about that. Talk about the lead up to launching the company and how you made that decision.
So, the lead up to starting Tree Star. It really all started with me quitting my job, right?
As it often does.
I had worked as a paralegal for a law firm for several years. I saw the opportunity to leave that job at one point, and I ended up working for a wine importing business for about a year that I previously had worked for before the law firm. Lots of going back and forth here. And
did you have a background in wine, or what was it about the wine import business that...
So I had a background in wine because I worked there before I worked for the law firm. But before then, no, I had no background in wine. I had landed the job through a connection, and it was a small business, still is a small business. But I was doing, you know, day-to-day administrative tasks. And then as it's a small business, so it grew, I was doing more operational stuff, importing containers and overseeing all that, like, logistical aspects of it.
Drinking lots of good wine?
Drinking lots of great wine. You know how it goes.
Did you have some favorites, favorite origins or grapes?
So I'm a sucker for Spanish and French wines. Anything from the south of France, super tasty. They tend to be like these robust wines, like kind of like meaty and stewy sometimes. Yeah. Also, Spain, one of my favorite regions is definitely Rueda. Rueda produces these really delicious, bright, fruity, citrusy wines. Nice. Not so acidic like the French wines, but still really, really tasty and unique, which is what you kind of look for in a wine, you know?
Yeah.
But the most important thing is to enjoy it, right? So
so you went from wine importing to soap making.
Yeah. So,
you quit the job at the wine importer.
So I quit my job at the wine importing company. I had already incorporated myself before I had quit, so I knew that I wanted to start my own business. I just had no idea what to do, to be honest with you. As a child, I always kind of wanted to be an inventor, right? Invent something, bring it to market. Something great that would meet a need or a function or have some sort of functionality to it.
Yeah.
And I was stuck with this, you know, dilemma. I had no job. And I had to figure out what to do. I saw the opportunity to kind of just like tackle it and start something of my own. And food naturally came up because it's kind of one of the easier things to transition to. I saw it that way at the moment. You can get things like your home food processor's permit, where you can blend spices or make baked goods from home and sell them without much regulation.
Yeah, the cottage industry laws.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So I was kind of like in, like, looking and peeking around and poking in that direction.
So you were actually thinking about starting a food business?
Yeah,
What were some of the ideas? My contending idea, I know.
Was this Venezuelan flan that my mom makes. Like, I wanted to take her recipe and bring it to mass market. Flan is found all over the place, but this Venezuelan flan, it's a little creamier than your traditional flan. It's not so gelatinous.
Yeah.
So I really, like, that's what I was kind of going for. I'm not a cook, so I was really starting from scratch, creating something out of nothing. And then, I guess, like, I realized that I'm not a cook, so it was going to be pretty difficult to do that and launch a business doing that. But I wanted to find something that was I could make first off, low cost, low overhead, make out of ingredients that I could source, you know, online or at stores. Something that a consumer product that people would repurchase again, and then more also very important, something you could brand. After I quit my job, I flew to France and took a little vacation. I spent about a week out there, and I took we got an Airbnb. This had this amazing, luxurious bathtub, and that kind of got the wheels turning. And I came back to New York, and about 2 months later, I decided to make a bar of soap, make a log of soap, a loaf of soap.
Is that how it's made?
Yeah.
So it's, actually walk us through the soap making process.
So natural soap is not your average soap that you find on shelves at Duane Reade or Walgreens, whatever.
Yeah.
The definition of soap is it's a mixture of a fatty acid and an alkali salt.
Okay.
Right. So there's this process called saponification where you convert olive oil or any fat you can use, olive oil, coconut oil, castor bean oil, or you can use even animal fat, human fat, whatever, tallow, and you break down those molecules using an alkali salt, sodium hydroxide. It sounds like a chemical, but it's a natural salt that actually comes from the burning of and the combustion of wood. So the way that soap was discovered, this interesting fact that I had no idea about until I started the company, was that soap was discovered from animal fat drippings dripping onto the coal ashes.
Oh, like a piece of meat roasting over a fire or
exactly,
something?
Exactly, yeah. And this animal fat would drop onto the coal ashes, which is like a high alkali, right? And someone touched it, and it created this kind of like resinous, liquidy substance that would actually clean them, right? It didn't lather or anything like that. The conception of lather is something that's like mass marketed, you know, but soap doesn't naturally really lather. It's not supposed to.
Okay.
But that's how soap was discovered, which is pretty impressive. You know, it's a fun fact.
Yeah. So you take a big piece of animal meat and hang it over your stove and, no. So what's your process for making soap?
So the process of making soap is you pick your ingredients, right? So personally, we use a base of olive oil, coconut oil, castor bean oil. We use palm oil as well. Sometimes we use avocado oil or shea butter.
What do the different oils do? Why choose one over another?
Some of them have different properties. Some are more moisturizing than others. Some of them have more vitamin E than others. They have different functionalities. Some are more UV protective than others. So they all have their different properties. Castor bean oil, for example, is something that we use to help it the bar lather up more, because people always look for a bar that lathers.
Yeah.
So, they all have their little properties here and there. And then together, you know, they make the bar of soap, which is kind of cool, because you would never assume that all these oils in liquid form or semi-hard form would create a hard bar of soap.
So you take like a bottle of olive oil and mix it with the sodium, what was it?
Hydroxide, exactly.
Hydroxide. And so, what happens?
So basically, it's kind of like baking without heating anything up, right? You first have to dissolve the sodium hydroxide in water, wait for it to stabilize, come down to room temperature, and then you mix it in with your oils, your fat, whatever fat you choose. This is all calculated too, because it has to be a precise calculation and ratio of
like
oil.
A recipe.
Yeah, exactly. Because sodium hydroxide is actually caustic, so it could hurt your skin if you use too much of it. If there's residual sodium hydroxide in the bar of soap, it could actually be really harmful to your skin.
Is it lye?
Yeah, lye.
So this is like a Fight Club, the
exactly,
Fight Club thing where he gets lye burns.
The human fat thing and the lye burns, which I've gotten plenty of burns in my time, for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So you take this sodium hydroxide solution.
Right. So we take the sodium hydroxide solution, we mix it into our kind of, let's say, for lack of a better word, our batter, right? Our mixture of oils. And we have a big bowl, we mix it with a hand blender. And slowly but surely, the process of saponification starts to happen. And the oil bonds start to break down and starts to create this like thicker substance, the batter. Right?
As you're stirring?
As you're stirring with the hand blender, right? And eventually that, if you kept stirring, it would just solidify into a rock hard bar of soap, right? So you try to prevent that, obviously, because you want to pour it into a mold. So you get it right to the point where it's just in between hard and soft, like still pourable, and you pour it into any mold of your choosing. We use these logs so we can get these square blocks, and you let it dry. It hardens overnight. And then you cut it, you proceed to cut it, and then actually you have to let the soap cure for about 4, sometimes 6 weeks, depending on the recipe and how much water you use, because that water is just a vehicle for the sodium hydroxide. So you have to let that water evaporate, get out, so you get that finished product that's a nice hard bar.
Yeah.
You know? If immediately after you cut the soaps, you'll feel they're still kind of wet. You can squeeze them between your fingers. So
it's like the texture of... like what kind of, what is it, like a cookie dough texture?
I guess
or
so. Yes, like a cookie dough texture.
Okay.
Yeah.
And obviously soaps have lots of flavors and or aromas, I guess, and colors. How do you incorporate those into that process?
So, we incorporate those by adding these natural ingredients to our soaps. You know, the important thing for us was to stand out as a soap company. There are so many soaps out there. The market is saturated with soap, so it's really difficult to stand out, right? So what I kind of try to do is kind of be like this mad scientist, you know? Creating soap is a process of chemistry, but we also add these natural ingredients like spices that add colorants and other beneficial values. So we use, for instance, we use your turmeric, burlap and barrel's turmeric, poppy seeds exfoliate. Turmeric also gives a gentle exfoliating effect when you use it. It's a nice fine powder.
You've also worked with some local breweries and whiskey distilleries.
Yeah.
I'm looking at your whiskey soap and your beer soap right now. Tell me about that process.
So the beer soaps are actually pretty cool because the beer makes it more functional than a normal bar of soap than the water would, right?
Oh, because it foams?
Yeah, it gives it this extra creamy lather, which is pretty exciting. Like, I get really excited about it because you would never think that beer would be more functional. It's actually rich in antioxidants, helps combat acne. I don't take that standpoint so much, but it is more functional in a bar of soap than water. Just imagine it. It's like a steeped tea, you know, fermented liquid. So everything that's in that beer is still left over in the bar while the liquid, the water part, is not. So it really gives it that rich, creamy lather that people look for. And it also gives it a really unique smell. You can kind of smell the grain coming through the bar of soap, that wheat, that barley.
And the whiskey soap?
The whiskey soap, I wish I could say it's a little more functional. That's just more like a novelty thing. We partnered with we partnered with a Noble Oak, a double bourbon whiskey company in Kentucky. And they had this great idea to do a little project together, and we worked with them. It was great. The way we found Noble Oak was at a event about a year into starting the company. We wanted to find a social mission to kind of embed everything about TreeStar with. And we found an organization called One Tree Planted. One Tree Planted is this organization that they have a mission of global reforestation, and they plant one tree with as little as $1 in anywhere of their partner places and all across the world.
Wow.
So it was an affordable way to kind of give back. You know, after all, we are using plant oils for our soaps. We would like to help plant more trees. And there's a synergy to it, because soaps are cleaning your body, plants are cleaning the air. You know, so we felt like it was an appropriate partnership.
Yeah.
So we went to this planting tree event in Brooklyn and met Noble Oak, who happens to they have the same partner, One Tree Planted. So we met them, we decided to do this co-branded project, and there we go.
So obviously there are lots of commercial industrial soaps on the market. What, just in terms of how it's made, like, how is your process different from the process that goes into making a bar of Dove soap or something like that?
So you might be surprised to hear that a bar of Dove soap is not really soap. You have to be careful what
you buy.
We've been
lied to forever.
Yeah, they'll like sneak in. If you look at the packaging, they can't use the word soap on their packaging, because the FDA actually regulates this. Soap is a mixture of an alkali salt and fatty acids, right?
Yeah.
So you need to use like that coconut oil, that olive oil, something like that, and lye. And those have to be the main ingredients that help clean. But the main ingredient in most of these other bars are like a sodium lauryl chemical, which is pretty much a detergent. It's a degreaser. That's not, under the FDA, it's not considered soap, right?
Interesting.
So it's made similarly, but basically like a Dove bar is kind of just like they use a lot of fillers, chemical fillers. They still use some natural soap, usually out of tallow, animal fat, which is a more affordable option, but the majority of those mass-produced soaps that are out there are just detergents that are pretty, pretty intense and irritating on your skin.
Wow.
And I grew up using those, and I always had really dry skin and sensitive skin, so it's one of the reasons why I decided to make it myself.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
This episode is brought to you by New York Mutual Trading, the premier Japanese food, alcoholic beverage, and restaurant supply specialist. Mutual Trading is the Japanese food authority, true to the heart in upholding genuine Japanese food traditions, and progressive in exploring new ways to provide innovative restaurant supplies and services. They import, export, distribute, and manufacture the top brands for retailer and food service customers nationwide. Learn more at nymtc.com.
And we're back. You're listening to Why Food, and our guest this week is Jose Alvarez, founder and owner of TreeStar. Before the break, we were talking about the process of making soap, and now I want to put Jose on the spot and talk about the process of making a soap business, which is a whole other thing. Just for a little bit of background, you make all of the soap that you sell yourself, personally, by hand, your hands, in your home, right?
Yeah.
And that's both good and bad.
Totally, yeah.
So the business has been around 3 years. You've grown quite a bit. You've got lots of customers, but you're at this sort of an interesting inflection point in the growth of the business, to say, like, the way that you've been doing it for the last 3 years isn't going to continue to work as the business grows beyond where it is now.
Right.
So I guess just talk us through that point in the business's growth and the decisions that you're making around it.
So You're right. 3 years in or 2.5 years in, it's one of the most difficult things has been to manage production and keep up with the demand. Luckily for me, I started a business where everyone needs soap, especially now.
Pretty regularly.
Yeah, pretty regularly. And especially now, a lot of people are concerned about washing their hands regularly.
Yeah.
So at first, you know, it was pretty easy to manage it coming out of my house. I started in my kitchen pretty quickly. I had to move out of my kitchen because soap and kitchen does not really mix. I would find pieces of soap on my plates and on random dishes and utensils. My partner would say, oh, I think I just tasted some soap while eating dinner.
Yeah.
So I moved out into our sunroom, which is basically like another bedroom that's doesn't even fit a queen-size mattress in it. So that's my soap manufacturing facility.
Like 9 feet by 9 feet?
Not even. Oh, man. It's, I'd say, like 10 by 6, okay. You know? So it's pretty small, and we have tables out there for production, a couple wireframe racks so we can have all our materials and soaps. And then the soaps actually cure outside in my dining room. So they flow out into the dining room.
You have the best smelling apartment I've ever been in my entire life.
Yeah, and I live on the first floor, so everyone comes in and smells them and doesn't complain.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been quite the journey, you know? I never assumed that I'd be making thousands and thousands. Excuse me. Thousands and thousands of soaps a year. So without that anticipation, it kind of caught up to me. And dealing with that has been difficult but manageable. You know, you find ways to do it. I kind of pivoted. I started candles as well. Started making soy candles. So it took a little bit of pressure off making the soaps all the time and having to keep up with production.
Candles are easier to make?
They're pretty, yeah. It's melting a base and pouring it into a vessel, as opposed to like kind of creating a bar of soap out of nothing and dealing with caustic materials and mixing and whatnot, and then the cure process takes a long time. But yeah, right now at this point in the business, like I have to seriously consider outsourcing that process or getting a space, a commercial space to produce it in, so I can produce larger batches. Right now, we're still I make all the bars, you know what I mean, by hand with a couple stick blenders that I have, my little like treasured stick blenders, hand blenders, you know, and I'm putting serious process into outsourcing it or getting a facility to do it because we really need to up our production in order to meet with the needs.
What are the pros and cons you see of doing that? Because there are, I mean, this is something that obviously you as a soap company are navigating, but it's something that a lot of food entrepreneurs navigate also,
right.
Whether to you come to a point where you can't make enough to keep up with demand yourself. And so the two general options are go with a co-packer, somebody who's going to take your recipe, a co-manufacturer, somebody who's going to take your recipe and scale it up for you, or to open your own facility and try to do that yourself. So what do you see as the pros and cons for both of those options?
So the pros and cons of both options, if you get a co-packer, man, that would be great. The problem, the con, I guess, of the co-packer is that costs are pretty expensive for soap making, especially when you're not mass producing, like, say, 100,000 bars at a time, you know, in a run. We're still not at that stage, but we are definitely in need of a co-packer, something like that. But yeah, like I said, costs can be pretty high with a co-packer, so struggling to find an affordable one that works. But then again, if I have a co-packer, I'm not spending most of my day making soap, you know, most of my time. Actually, I have to divide my time in between making the soap, manufacturing it, selling it, you know, because if no one sells it, there's no business.
Yeah, classic entrepreneur's problem. Too many places to be, not enough time to be in all of them.
You know it. And then, and you know, packaging, all that stuff. And then also one of the most important things is branding, which, you know, and as I'm juggling these four things, it's really easy to like kind of drop one of these balls and prioritize another one. Because again, if you're not prioritizing one thing, you're prioritizing another, you know, or you're not doing one thing and you're doing another.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about branding briefly, just because you brought it up, because your brand is so so specific and so consistent, and you've broadened it without much of a background in marketing or anything related to brand. Where does the Tree Star name come from? How did you come up with the brand, and how have you extended it beyond what the original vision of the company was when you started?
That's a good question, because it really has been an evolution. Yeah. Tree Star. So Tree Star is kind of a playful, cute name for a leaf or any plant, like anything that's growing off a tree, right? So if you look at trees, a lot of them have leaves that are shaped in a star, right?
So it's a technical, like a botanical term?
Kind of, yeah. I'd like to say it is. Like, don't quote me on that, you know what I mean? But like, we
sorry,
might
nobody's
be like,
listening.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's like a playful botanical term, let's say, right?
Okay. That's so cool.
And that's kind of like the direction that we took it in, right? It might be based on some things that I've like seen in my childhood and stuff like that. But that's the direction we took it. And it's interesting because like Tree Star is a name that I came up for the LLC with before I even knew I was making soap. I was incorporated in November of 2016.
You just thought it was a cool name?
Yeah. So I thought it was a good name. I kind of thought I wanted to do something natural, organic, plant-based.
Yeah.
So it's something that I went with. And at the end of the day, like, it doesn't matter. You can get a DBA and change it.
Sure.
Right. So yeah. It was just as to get incorporated. So the term Tree Star, like I said, it comes from like plant-based, playful, cute name. And then we kind of ran with that idea in making the soaps. Like I said, we're in the beauty cosmetic world, but we're not all about beauty and, you know, these high-end, we're a high-end product. We're a pretty expensive product. We sell $10 to $12 bars.
Yeah.
And those are products that you usually find at like spas, boutiques that sell other really high-end cosmetics.
Yeah.
We chose to take a more experiential, playful, cute approach to it. So Tree Star in the name is kind of cute, playful. And then with the experience-driven part, we figured we can make a product that kind of touches on all your senses. That's what I tried to do. Obviously there's some senses that I can't touch, like auditory, you know, you can't really hear the soap.
The squeak of soap on your skin, right?
But, you can smell the soaps, right? They're aromatic for the most part, unless it's an unscented bar. They look great. They almost look good enough to eat.
Yeah. They're super colorful and you have beautiful photography on your Instagram.
Right. Yeah. Vibrant. So we really try to touch on those senses and that's how we've kind of like grown to brand it. We have also like, I call them my soap babies because I make them and I love them, you know what I mean? And it's a lot of hard work. So, like, I have this personal connection to them, but, like, that helped me, it gave me the idea to kind of, like, market them in an anthropomorphic way. So I kind of call them my soap buddies. And on Instagram, like, if I'm walking around the city, I'll pull one out of my coat pocket and take a picture with the New York City skyline behind it. We're also very much like a New York City. I'm a New Yorker at heart. I was born and raised here. I like to think that Tree Star, or I want to see Tree Star be, like, the New York City brand of soap. You know what I mean? I would like to think of us as that. So we use a lot of like New York City aesthetics and buildings and stuff in our Instagram, even though it's weird because we're soap, you know, like you never find soap outside of the shower.
Yeah. But I mean, just cause we're talking about this anyway, you also, your New York City sunset candle are these beautiful, like a line drawing of the New York City skyline. And as the candle burns down behind the label, it looks like the sun is setting behind the city.
Totally. Yeah, that was kind of like an homage to New York City. Like I said, I'm a New Yorker and I can't help myself, right? So when we created a candle, I wanted to stand out. It's so hard to stand out in this business. Yeah. Like, I don't want to just create a candle. It's you drown in the oversaturated market. So I had to create something different. And what I came up with was this sunset candle. Like you said, it has the New York City skyline around the label. I hired a Queens artist to design it, and as you burn it, it glows behind the kind of translucent paper, so it gives a sunset effect.
Yeah.
And like, it seems odd, like no one's done that before, but
yeah. But it looks great.
Yeah.
Are there pieces of advice that you would give to yourself 3 years ago, things that you wish you'd known, things that ways that you would have built the business differently if you'd known then what you know now?
Yeah, I'd probably do a little more planning. I kind of jumped in. I had no job at this point, so I really jumped in full steam ahead.
Yeah.
With everything, not knowing what I was getting myself into. At first, I did it just to pay the bills, make some source of money, have a source of income while I was trying to find a job. So I didn't do much planning. And thankfully for me, it's a successful business. So I'm learning as I go. So really, like, I would have planned it out more, you know, started out with a business plan and all that good stuff. But there's so many resources nowadays. I'm self-taught with the soaping experience. You can look up everything online. There's a lot of community forums on the internet, Facebook, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
So information is very accessible nowadays. So it's been less rough.
And what do you have coming up? What's what's in the works?
So we like to keep it fresh and new. You know, it's hard to come up with new recipes and incorporate into them into our lineup. We already have like 28 SKUs right now.
Wow.
Got to keep up with making all those soaps. But we like to think of ourselves, we're kind of like, we use food ingredients in our soaps. So we are inspired by looking through magazines and food magazines like Bon Appetit, seeing what recipes, what scents and stuff like that comes mix and match. So we're going to look towards the next year, making more like food-based soaps using stuff like hibiscus, more turmeric, ginger.
Maybe a black lime.
Maybe a black lime. I don't know. here.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're looking to create like this more like really fancy stuff that you would never think of, you know, put in soap. So I'm really excited about it because, you know, the sky's the limit, really. We can put whatever we want in it. A lot of these ingredients have a lot of beneficial properties, but they also make the soap look great. And also it makes it feel so much better. There's something about using natural ingredients and also something that you consume and putting it on your skin. I guess that like I really value and I think it's a very cool thing.
Yeah. Let's do a little rapid fire fun segment before we wrap up. Valerie's better at thinking of these questions,
all
but
right,
I'm just gonna fall back on the ones that I always ask.
I was wondering what she was gonna ask.
Do you have a recommended stick blender if somebody is looking for an immersion blender for their kitchen?
Blender.
You know, actually, I don't have one. I need an immersion blender.
I'll give you my soapy one.
What's your recommended immersion blender?
So my recommended immersion blender is like a 3-speed Cuisinart blender. I don't know the exact model name, but it's under $30. It's great. It's got the speed adjustment, which is really great when you're making soap because you can manage the acceleration of the soap turning into soap, the oil turning into soap. And it's sturdy, it's metal, no plastic, obviously. Soap gets really hot when you make it, so it reaches up to like 180 degrees.
Right. Just
so you
from,
can't have a plow. Yeah,
from the chemical process, reaction?
Yeah, the hydrolysis of the oils, like the breaking down of the oil with the salt, gets extremely hot. So you can't use a plastic one. Yeah, it has to be metal.
Wow. All right, so the Cuisinart 3-speed.
Yeah. Go for it. Send me some if you guys want.
What's the best meal you've ever had that cost under $5?
So lately, we live in Jackson Heights, right? And this Birrielandia truck has been coming by, stationed on Roosevelt Avenue.
78th Street.
Yeah, oh my gosh, on 78th and Roosevelt, and I just can't get enough of it. I walk by it every time when I go home, and everything on their menu is under $5. They've got pretty much their birria, tacos,
I mean, they basically
their
meat. Have one thing on the menu in different formats.
Different forms, right, like the taco, the quesadilla, and what's the other
the
one?
The tostada.
The tostada, right?
Yeah.
And then the soup that they use, yeah. And yeah, everything's under $5. I would definitely recommend checking it out. Jackson Heights is a great hub for ethnic foods, it's worth checking out, Birrielandia.
What are some of your go-to sort of weeknight dishes? You've spent the day making soap and you're tired. What do you make for dinner?
So let's see. Make for dinner. Like, I'm a sucker for a good skirt steak. Man, I don't know what it is in me, but I would love going to the butcher a block away, getting a skirt steak, and just making some potatoes and asparagus. I'm pretty simple.
Yeah.
I've been heavy on salmon lately, too, so I've been digging that. Salmon, steak, some veggies, potatoes.
What did you eat for lunch as a kid growing up?
Rice, beans, plantains, a little bit of chicken. Rice and beans were pretty much a staple of mine growing up. Love them.
Yeah. Do you have a color of bean or a type of
bean? Yeah, white rice, black beans, maybe a little corn to add some texture to the whole mixture. And some plantains. Oh, man. And then put a protein in there. You're good to go.
What about a wine? Do you have a recommended bottle of wine? Something you've...
Not by name, but I would definitely recommend a region like Languedoc.
Yeah.
Great. South of France. Check it out. Robust wines, like I said earlier. If you like French wines, definitely check out. You don't want to spend so much money on a Sancerre. You can find the sister of Sancerre. It's pretty much Touraine. It's a neighborhood close by. They have these like bright, acidic, citrusy wines as well.
Nice.
Very minerally too. And then Spain, like I said, Rueda for white wines, nice fruity wines. And then if you want like a really robust red wine, I would try Toro, T-O-R-O.
Okay.
Doesn't get a lot of recognition in the States, but it's worth checking out.
And that's a region, a production
region?
Yeah,
it's a region, denomination of origin in Spain.
since you take pictures of soap in all kinds of random places, what's the wackiest place you've ever taken a picture of your soap?
That's a good question. Oh, okay. Wackiest place. So I went to Chicago to visit some friends, and then I visited the Sears Tower, right? And I had the soaps on me.
So you went up to the top?
I went up to the top, paid whatever amount of money to go up to the top, waited in line for like 2.5 hours. And then, you know, they have that viewing deck. This is so embarrassing. And they took a picture of me with, like, I had someone take a picture of me with the soaps, and then I actually put the soaps on the viewing deck and took pictures of the soap. So I guess that's the craziest place that I've taken.
Top of the Sears Tower.
Yeah, top of the Sears Tower would be it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, where can our listeners find you, find your soaps online or in person?
So you can find them online at www.treestarnyc.com. On Instagram, you can follow us. I would really appreciate it, at treestar.nyc. And in stores, you can find us right now at the West Elms in the city, in Chelsea, Dumbo, Upper West Side, different boutique gift shops like Lockwood or the Brass Owl in Queens, and also the airports, LaGuardia and JFK Airport.
Oh, nice.
Take a look at us there. Grab a bar. Take one to your friend. It's a nice handmade gift from New York. And check us out there.
That's awesome. Thanks to the Red Crickets for our theme song, Blind. Thanks to Matt Patterson and Jess Kranjic for being the awesome sound engineers they always are. You can find me via my spice company at Burlap and Barrel on Instagram, burlapandbarrel.com. You can reach us at yfood@heritageradionetwork.org. Send us comments, feedback, questions, nominations, I don't know, whatever. We love to hear from you. Thanks most of all to Jose for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
See you next week.
Why Food is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.